Clubhouse.
So, congratulations.
No, not yet. I haven't exactly said yes.
Why not? What are you waiting for?
I know you never really liked him.
Come on. That's not true. I do like him. From you. It brings me joy to know that you are happy. You deserve that. I want that for you. For real.
Josh, you are so special to me. I always want you in my life. You promise me that.
Yeah. I want you in mine, too. Always. Forever. Relationships don't have to be defined, right?
No, they don't.
We know who we are to each other.
And welcome to the Heller Good podcast for younger. I'm Sheila McGann.
And I'm Emma Good.
Tonight we're discussing, yay, drum roll please, the season 7 premiere of Younger. This episode is called A Decent Proposal.
This episode was written by Darren Starr, show creator, and directed by Andrew Fleming. If you haven't had a chance, go back one episode to get yourself caught up with our recap of season 6.
Yeah, we did a whole lot of homework for you guys, we condensed season 6 into about an hour.
Yeah, so if you it was back tough.
It was, because, you know, we were just, you know, we could have rambled for hours, it felt like. But Andrew Fleming, that's interesting because he directed a number of younger episodes, including one of my top 5, Emma, for reals. He directed Fraudline. That's the one from season 5 where they go to Germany.
Oh, I love that. Is that the cabaret episode with
Diana?
That
is the cabaret, yes. And that is like why I love that episode so, so much, is that Diana and Cheryl Sussman, they reprise their role from apparently like a 1999 party, which I'm like, damn, I'm old enough to have partied at both of those.
You know, you do get little glimpses of Diana's past where she clearly had a wild time. I remember the first season, one of the books that they brought in was a person that was still partying, but that Diana used to party with.
And she was not having it.
No, she was over that period.
That is funny. The other thing that we have for you, so we did the season 6 recap in one succinct episode, but we also have a Spotify playlist that we've created. It's called the Heller Good Younger Playlist by Pod Clubhouse. It's a little bit of mood music to help you along as you wait the days in between the episodes. And I'm also going back into the Younger Vault in order to bring songs from previous seasons into that as well. So right now you have live tonight episodes 1 and 2 at the minimum, and then you have some look back songs from previous seasons. So we're going to keep on top of that. So this way you have a little bit of entertainment to keep you going. So the season premiere of Younger, we have been waiting for this for like 18 months. Are you excited?
Honestly, I just couldn't wait. Ever since season 6 finished, I just was hanging out for this and was devastated it got delayed because of the pandemic.
I actually thought that they were going to just can it because of, you know, just the constraints with COVID and filming, because they film in New York and they were like, I believe they had started filming and they were shut down.
Yeah, I think they started just as the pandemic was happening.
Tonight, when they were going to Claire's house, the train was going by Silver Cup Studios. That's in Long Island City. That's in Queens. You know, that's the heart of where things were breaking down last year.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that this got to this point and it's being distributed by Paramount Plus, and it'll be also available on Hulu the following day. So I believe that they're releasing 4 episodes tonight for April 15th, and then it'll be 1 per week afterwards. So they get like a big front load, and then it's going to be 1 a week after that for 11 or maybe 12 episodes. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and if you're listening from Australia, it's being shown on the streaming service Stan. And I believe they're following the same schedule as the US.
That doesn't usually happen.
No, but, you know, strange things are starting to happen in the world of television over here. So maybe
good.
We'll be more up to date.
Right, now if they can only catch you up with Grey's Anatomy.
That would be good. But also, I did learn, I may have mentioned in the recap about the UK only showing season ones and two.
Right.
I have looked this up. It is apparently now being shown on Comedy Central in the UK. They started season three. Yeah. They started season three last year during the pandemic. It seems that they're doing the seasons back to back. But I think the UK will be a little bit behind for season seven. They won't be at the same schedule.
So UK listeners, do not watch season seven right now. You will be wholly disappointed of all the things that you missed. There's lots in there. Season five, firecrackers, like all over the place. Season six, bombshells.
They were definitely like fast moving seasons. A lot happened in those.
So this episode now, I'm just so excited that we're getting to get back into these characters and all of their shenanigans. What were some of the high points for you?
Well,
I mean, we'll dive into the episode. We're assuming, I'm just going to give the disclaimer now. We assume that you've watched the episode. We are not recapping the episode per se. We're going to talk about things that happened. So we may not touch on every single event that happens in the episode. So don't expect that. This is more of a discussion about that. So there will be spoilers. So with that being said, what was your high point for this episode?
There was a lot about Lauren, it felt like, in this episode, and I kind of like that. I feel like season six, we didn't get a lot of Lauren, but she was definitely sort of front and center this episode.
Yes, I got a very Lady Gaga kind of a feeling from her this episode. Low point for me, though, so I'm going to agree with you on Lauren, but low point is that, you know, Diana's off on her honeymoon, and I'm kind of living for Diana in these episodes. You know, she just brings a level of just snark and... You know, we talked about in the season six recap, like this emotional vulnerability that she just now is just such a life force when she's in the episodes. I'm just like, it's kind of missing without her. But I thought this was a really great way to start the season, though.
I agree. And, you know, I kind of felt the same. It doesn't feel the same when Diana's not around. She just brings something so different to the show. And I really hope this honeymoon does not go too long.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing a grand tour of Italy, in all fairness. I mean, like, you are definitely a world traveler and you are somebody who, you know, definitely takes her time in going places. Yeah. I cannot see Diana rushing this at all.
No, and I imagine that Enzo probably still has a lot of family that want to meet the new member of the family.
Yes. Yes, definitely. All right, so let's dive into the episode. I guess we'll start with Liza, right?
Yeah, well,
I think that's who we're going to have to start with every time out. Yeah,
it was the big cliffhanger as well.
Yes, and I'm so glad that they literally picked up exactly where season six ended. They were still at the wedding.
Yeah.
And, you know, Diana's off going, arrivederci, bitches, which, you know, was just hilarious. That was the only Diana part of this episode.
I know. We didn't get to see her, but we heard her.
Yes. And you know what? That's good enough for me. So, yeah. So the big lingering question, as you mentioned, is that this marriage proposal, and she kind of gave him a non-answer again, yeah, right?
Yeah. I mean... I can kind of understand it. It did seem to come from nowhere. Earlier in season six, I think he'd asked her to move in, and then, you know, her age was discovered.
She freaked out, right.
Yeah, and it was all decided maybe best not for her to move in. So to go from maybe moving in to not moving in and now suddenly a marriage proposal, I'm not quite sure where Charles's head was at. And I can understand why Liza was a bit like, I'm not sure what my answer is right now.
And, you know, she did have some points that I thought were good, too, is that you've been drinking and, you know, we have children to talk to. Like, it's not just, you know, a whim, like a fly by the seat of your pants kind of an answer. Like, he's got two young girls and she's got her daughter. Her daughter's obviously a lot older, but the two younger daughters, you know, there's feelings to be considered there. So
it would be a big change to the two young girls. I mean, they obviously still live part time with him. Obviously, Caitlin's grown up at college, do you call it? Not university? I can get confused.
You can call it both, but you know, she's away at college. You know.
Yeah, she's got a bit of her own life. It probably isn't going to be as big an impact for her. So, you can see from previous, you know, seasons that Liza is generally a little bit cautious about big life decisions like that. Yes, sometimes she'll go and experience something new, but for something that's big and life-changing like that, she'll take it a bit more cautiously. That's just the type of person she is.
And then she also mentions that, you know, he's still technically married. Like, that is a big wrinkle. We're not polygamists over here. So do you think it was fair for him to withdraw the question?
I feel like for him withdrawing it means that he didn't listen to her concerns and he felt maybe embarrassed by asking in the first place and just thought she would say yes and go with it. I don't think it was fair at all. I think he needed to like listen to her and say, yeah, okay, that's actually quite a good idea. Let's maybe go and talk to the girls or have a bit of a longer discussion privately, not in the middle of a wedding. But yeah, he withdrew it immediately.
And her concerns were valid. I mean, as much as it may have been a delay tactic, if she is maybe a little commitment phobic, and she does flesh out that notion a little bit more this episode, but for him to withdraw it right then and there, yeah, I agree. I think like his pride was hurt, and that is touched upon in this episode. I think it was just like he was so sure of the answer that the reality is this didn't even play into his mind.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. But I also think, you know, the fact that he is still married, there's a lot of emotions that go through getting divorced. I really think you need to get that out of the way before you think about getting into a marriage with someone else.
And even if it is over and you're separated and you're going through the legal rigmarole, I'm sorry, if someone slides a divorce decree in front of you that you have to just sign at that point, there's going to be a whole set of new, fresh emotions.
Yeah.
You know, in the finality of it, right? You know, you've built a life with someone and you have all this shared history and maybe shared family members now, children coming along, that I just think that, yeah, I agree that there's going to be so much emotion wrapped up in it that you just need to give yourself some space and some time. At least let the ink be dry before you start, you know, handing out, you know, marriage requests.
Yeah. And, you know, Liza herself, you have to remember in like the younger universe, this has only been 2 years from season one to now season seven. She was 40 in season one. She's only 42 now, which is just blows my mind. So, you know, she's only just getting over her own divorce as well. It was sort of wrapped up within a year or 18 months or so. But in this universe, it hasn't really been that long either.
Right. And, you know, there's all these other complicating factors for her. Like there's Josh, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk more about him in a little bit. But there are a lot of complicating factors in her life. And I was a little disappointed that Charles sort of had this knee-jerk reaction. For someone who's so circumspect and so reserved, it felt so, I'm going to say, it felt so immature. It really did.
It did. And I don't know, is it best that we talk about what happened at the end of the episode now? Because it does sort of follow on from what we're discussing now. So obviously by the end of the episode, Liza did he ask to meet her at the glass carousel or was she asking him? I can't remember
exactly.
She
asked him. Oh, after she talked to Josh at Lauren's party, she texted him to meet her at the glass carousel.
Yes, that's correct. Where she obviously told him that she didn't really feel that they needed to get married. And the reaction he had to that, you know, he didn't see a future without marriage and to him marriage was so important. And I can kind of understand that. But they haven't been dating that long. He still needs to get divorced. And the fact that he's like, I'm going to break up with you, which is what he ultimately does because you don't want to get married, again, feels a bit knee-jerk reaction.
Let me ask you this, because this was something that Liza said that I just, like, my head kind of snapped back up to look, be like, did she really just say that? And it's when they're at the carousel and she says, you know, I was married before and that didn't go well. I almost feel like in a devil's advocate kind of a way, that's not Charles's fault.
That's true.
Right? So what she says too, she goes like, we're free. Like we're like unconstrained by definitions and rules if we choose this route. More so to the fact that, like, you know, I was married before. You know what? She got married, and this is not an indictment and this is not a judgment, but she got married when she was very young, right?
Yeah.
You know, she was basically just out of college herself, and she got married, and she had a baby, like, right after that. So she's in a different mindset when you're 20 years removed from that big life decision. You're a different person. And Charles had nothing to do with the hurt and the heartache that she ended up with. So I feel like that was unfair on her part. Like, I'm going to lay blame, but sprinkle a little over here, sprinkle a little over there. I almost feel like her response, that response, especially saying that, you know, it didn't go well. I feel like that's immature too. Like, you need to be able to separate what you went through and you need to learn from it in order to move on and be a useful person to the next person you're going to partner up with. But to say that, and I feel like that was really the thing that like set Charles off.
Yeah, and maybe he felt that she sort of sees marriage as a step to failure eventually. I mean, I can kind of understand that. It's a bit of a hard one, I think. She's clearly had a hard time being married to her previous husband. He wasn't the greatest husband. He was a gambler. You know, she feels like she missed out on life because she went to New Jersey. I think she loves Caitlin and that, but maybe, yeah, she didn't choose the best husband, maybe stayed with him longer than she should have, and has regrets in her life that were ultimately her decision to stay as long as she did and live the life she did out in New Jersey.
So the big theme this episode really was about this notion of labels and needing labels or not needing labels. It came up with the name change back to Empirical from Millennial with the board. Right. That was a big label change that Kelsey was reacting to. Liza and Josh having the conversation about letting their friendship be just that, just whatever it is to whatever, you know, whatever they needed to be in that moment. And then Liza, you know, talking to Charles about it, she's looking at it from almost like a 26 or a 27 year old's perspective. You know, not being tied down, not needing these labels to define what she is or how she needs to define happiness isn't through maybe a conventional, you know, name. Great. Basically then say, yeah, that, you know, but then Charles says, I believe in the tradition of marriage. Like, is that fair? Like, does something need to a label in order for it to be something?
I don't think it has to be a label to be something. And I do feel like this showed that her pretending to be 26 for so long, she has started to think like a younger person would. You know, she's been in that world for a while now where, let's face it, like, a lot of younger people are a bit more fluid with their labels
or their really lives and things like exactly.
that. You know, I have some people say to me that, oh, young people want to be labeled. But it's not really that. They just don't want to be put into one specific box. They want to be, you know,
fluid. You use the word. Fluid
is the word, you know. I think that's something that's changing a lot in the younger generations. And I know the podcast listeners don't know, but you do, Sheila. My dad is transgender. So I have, you know, an even an older generation that's like sees right. themselves as fluid as well. So I do think labels don't really mean as much maybe to the younger generations. And I think with Liza and Josh, their discussion just showed that there is no really easy label to give them. Their relationship is what it is. It's complicated. It's very deep. They're there for each other. It's more than a friendship. It's not a romantic relationship at the moment, but there is a bit of like romance there still.
There's always that sexual tension between these
yeah,
two.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I don't think that will ever go away.
Mm-mm.
But I mean, it's
Josh
hard
is, like,
to put a label.
Than, like, 1,000 sons.
So. How can you not want to? Yeah,
exactly.
You know, so yeah, it's. I just think, why do you need to be labeled? And it does feel like marriage can seem like a bit of a old fashioned institute sometimes.
I agree. And I like the fact that so much of this episode hinged upon, hey, we don't need millennial as a label to define like what we've done, you know? So I thought it was a really good use of the theme throughout. So I'm going to kind of like rapidly hit the brakes here and like switch gears. Quinn is back again in this episode.
Oh, I don't want Quinn to be back.
So I really just kind of wanted to bring her up more so in the context of Charles, less so about Kelsey, because Quinn finds him sitting at the bar and like they've had this board change and he's really drowning his sorrows in his scotch, it looks like.
Definitely.
And I felt bad. But I feel like the conversation that he has with Quinn here is about as honest and about as forthcoming that he's been like in a show of emotion or a show show of an opinion about what's going on with him. He spoke his mind. He was as forceful as his respectful nature would allow by telling her that, you know, sorry isn't good enough. Like, you almost bankrupted us, right? And, you know, and when he says you almost bankrupted us, I know I can see in his mind he's looking out at the empirical floor at all of the people who almost lost their job because of her whimsical nature on how she, you know, she treated the company like a toy, like she said.
I don't know if it was whimsical as opposed to just, like, being a pure bitch, but
I was trying to be nice, I guess. But yeah, no, I'm gonna go there. I just every time I see her, like, I bristle. And, you know, like, good for Lauren Benatti for, like, playing this character the way that she does. Like, I just wondered, like, do you think that this is a change for him this season? So what we saw with his conversation with Liza, you know, saying that marriage is a tradition, I believe in it. Like, you know, he was being definitive. And he's always just so reserved and so calm that these were just two instances in one very short episode where I'm just like, huh, like, I feel like he's different.
I feel the same, like, because sometimes in previous seasons, you don't feel like he actually speaks his mind ever. You feel like he's constantly censoring himself.
Right, there's always a pause before he speaks.
Yes.
Which is probably a good thing. Maybe I should learn that trait, but...
I should, but I just wouldn't. Like, I just sometimes say what I'm thinking and have to deal with the repercussions of that. But yeah, I think in this episode, it definitely sort of, you get a clear understanding of what he's thinking and how he's feeling. Like, you're right, he was still respectful to Quinn, but he definitely let her know what he really thought of what she did. And, you know, it was pretty awful what she did. She could have had hundreds of people lose their jobs.
Right. I just feel like it was interesting to see, just, he just had more dimension. Even if it was negative dimension, but it was like a little bit more depth to who he is. Because, like, you and I in the season 6 recap, we talked about, like, he's kind of like one dimensional a lot of times because, like you said, he doesn't speak his mind. So, like, this is a good change, even if it's not always the most positive. But, you know, we definitely need to see more of what's going on with him.
I definitely hope we get a bit more of this side of Charles because you're right. He seems so one dimensional. I think I said in the recap, he doesn't seem like human. Because he just looks too perfect. So, yeah, it'll be good to see some flaws, I think, in Charles and, you know, just see his character develop a bit more because he's just sort of been this, like, aspiration for Liza. And, yeah, it'll be good to see what the real person's like because I don't feel we've seen that yet.
Yeah, so I kind of want to shift to Josh only because we've already talked a little bit about it, but I think we need to dive into him because that's where the other pull of this episode goes. Yeah. But not talking about him and Liza at first.
Josh Claire. And Claire.
I don't like Claire. I just don't like her. So
I wouldn't say I love her. I think I just don't really have strong feelings for Claire.
So. All right, let me tell you why I don't like Claire. So I don't like Claire because I liked her in the beginning when him and her first got together back in the end of season 5.
Yeah.
You know, the whirlwind wedding, all of that was all fantastic. But when she started asking Liza to lie for them and basically making it like a setup, like, well, Josh protected your lie. Like, don't you owe him this? Like, almost like blackmail.
Yeah, and that was not cool. That was not a great way to do things.
And then, you know, in season 6, like, she shows up at literally the 11th hour of her pregnancy to Josh to say, hey, so this is happening. And now this, like, no, she's fine. She's bringing the baby to Ireland, wants to meet her family. That's all fine and good. But she springs this new boyfriend on him.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and Josh was also worried about her maybe stealing Gemma and not coming back, which is a legitimate concern when it comes to parents with different international backgrounds. I mean, these things do happen. But yeah, I think it's not cool to sort of spring and what appeared to be a live-in boyfriend as well.
Yeah, because like, they were living together. Like, I love your daughter. Like, implying that he spent enough time with her to know.
Yeah, and he's not even being told.
Are we bringing these toys with us?
Yeah, and he, you know, and Josh clearly doesn't even know that this guy's in her life, which is, I think, a little bit unusual. You would think you would let the other parent know there's a significant other person in your child's life.
And not in such a high stress moment where it's like, you're taking my daughter away from me for a week, you know, and not to mention the stress that you mentioned, like, you know, where Lauren and Kelsey were talking to him about, is she going to kidnap my daughter?
Yeah. I love that Lauren actually, like, blatantly said it to her.
Lauren is just so on brand this episode that it's just like, yes, with her like squatting in Diana's office and whatnot. Yeah, Lauren just brings like those. She's almost like replacing Diana, like her, the energy that she brings.
Yeah.
But nobody can replace Diana. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah, no, Lauren doesn't have quite the same snarkiness that Diana has. You know, Lauren's just a bit too enthusiastic about things.
Right. The energy level is high.
Different energy.
There's one moment, I think, in season 6 where Diana tells to Liza, like, deactivate yourself when Liza was getting into the upper stratosphere of excitement.
Yeah.
And I've since adopted that. As I said that to my son, I'm like, you need to deactivate.
I think that's a great way to get them to calm down.
Yeah, but he understands that. He's like, oh, okay, got it. I have a 7-year-old son, so, you know, there's a lot of deactivation that needs to happen. So now, like, I'm going to transition over to Lauren's party a little bit with the conversation between Josh and Liza at this party. So we talked about it just a little bit before, that they want to continue to be friends and agree to do it without definitions and labels. But, and we talked about this just a little bit in the season 6 recap, the comfortability level between these two. Do you feel that this is where she's at her most comfortable, at home the most?
Definitely. I mean, I've always felt that Liza is her true self when she's around Josh. She just doesn't seem to be worried about other people or worried. She worries about how it looks with her being so much older and stuff like that. But other than that, when she lets that go, she's just her and not worrying about too many other things.
Right, because like with Charles, you know, they had to keep so much of their relationship a secret, so they couldn't go out to dinner, they couldn't do a lot of things.
Yeah.
But like just when she stands with Josh at this party, there's just a different air between them. They're so comfortable with each other, they're so familiar with each other, and it's just
always in sync.
Yes. And I think that ad from season 6 really captures their dynamic, is that they're not okay unless they're close with each other.
And that's why I think I really hated the letter that she wrote. But it's like, you've got to think, this letter was only maybe, what, a week before the episode we're in now? Not that long ago. So they've gone from the letter of, I can never see you again.
I need you in my life.
Yeah, exactly. Because she knows it's true. They've got just the history they have between them now. I think they can't ever be fully out of each other's life. It would have to take something pretty crazy, I think, for them to not be in each other's life in some form or other.
But I just also find it funny that he's also already been married and that still hasn't deterred them.
Exactly.
So. Like friendship or you know, not or whatever. But, you know, like that retreat in season 6 where they take the microdose and she thinks it's Josh that comes to her room and Charles is like, oh, you were like a different person just then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Because she is a different person around Josh. Right. You know, she is herself. But not, with Charles, she never was. I just never felt she was herself with Charles.
Yeah, no, I agree.
All right, well, I think the only person we haven't spoken about yet is Kelsey.
So Kelsey had like a big emotional episode. I felt really bad for her. So we find, like, Zane is basically not in the episode save a FaceTime phone call. He quits over her promotion.
Yeah.
Is that valid? Like, is that real?
In the season 6 recap, I think I said that Zane just likes to throw temper tantrums, and this is just another temper tantrum of his, it seems like. She was already publisher before, and he was working as her subordinate. Oh, had he left at that point? I've forgotten now.
No,
he quit last time because she became publisher as well.
So
this is the second time he's done this to her. I just don't. I'm not a Zane fan. I don't like him. I don't really even see what Kelsey sees in him. But, you know, women get told they're emotional at work. But I feel like Zane is like one of the most emotional people I've ever seen at work. The way he just ups and leaves whenever anything doesn't go his way.
Yeah, I mean, he's complaining that there isn't a place for him at Millennial. Still Millennial when he quits. Mm-hmm. And then, like, you know, the book that he ended up fighting for and winning because it was a holdover from the Mercury publishing days is actually doing well. So there's clearly a place for him. He lobbied for this book and now it's Kelsey's to, you know, devour and have to deal with. So yeah, I agree with you. I think he's a very, I'm going to use that word again, immature. Like the men are really showing up as very immature this episode. I also found it funny that it's like Monday morning and he's obviously quit his job and he's in a suit and tie. He's on FaceTime with Kelsey. I was like, why is he in a suit?
Yeah, that's bizarre. I mean, who wears a suit when they're on FaceTime? You should see some of the things I was wearing during the pandemic and doing video calls.
I work from home now because we're still technically we're not really locked down, but like we haven't gone back to work. Half the week, I'm like, yeah, I don't need to wear a bra today.
That was pretty much me.
Today was not a bra day because it was just like, nah, it's Friday, whatever. Not doing it. Not feeling it today.
Exactly. And yet I do know a few people in my office that were getting dressed up as if they were going to the office. I didn't understand it. To me, it's like, I'm home, I'm comfortable, and that's the main thing. But yeah. Maybe Zane's one of those crazy people that gets dressed up to do anything business related.
I definitely would shower before work, but I would definitely be wearing like yoga pants and like a sweatshirt.
I'm not sure I really want to answer that question.
To each their own. We are non-judgmental here.
I would just say, though, I live alone, so it's not like there was anyone else inconvenienced.
Yeah, you had nobody to impress, right?
Yep.
So Quinn again. Quinn, I didn't want to talk to her about her again, but I have to because I have questions. So she's mocking Kelsey for the offer that Charles gave her. And it's just... it's as if she's learned nothing from her election loss. Like, she was running for Senate and she lost, and that this is how she came to encounter Charles and make that apology. But she doesn't seem to owe Kelsey anything, except she mocks her for the equity and the stock that he gave her. So what's your take on that? Is this giving Kelsey second thoughts about going back? What do you think?
You know, I think it is giving Kelsey second thoughts, but I feel like the way she's acting is why she should not be taking Quinn's money. It was almost belittling in a little way.
From Quinn?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I 100% stand behind that.
And then this is the person that's going to be funding your new company. Is that the relationship you want with your main investor? It's not a supportive relationship. So I do think it's the right choice to go back to Charles and Empirical / Millennial, as it was at the time. I think it kind of showed to me that that's why you don't want to be in business with Quinn.
It was a reminder of all the reasons why you were tearing your hair out and losing your hair, Kelsey, in season 6.
Exactly.
Quinn's a bully, basically, is my take on her. You know, she was so different when she did meet Charles in Chicago, and she was so much more humble, but Kelsey didn't seem to be deserving of any of that.
When she was talking with Charles, she definitely was a different person. She seemed to have learned a little bit from her mistakes. You know, and she kind of apologized a little bit, but I think it was not enough. And Charles told her that as well, you know, that just a simple apology wasn't really enough to make up for what she did. But with Kelsey, she was really, belittling, mocking. It was the old Quinn back again. You almost expected her to start like pounding on the table again and saying, we're going to do this, we're going to win, because, you know, she was back to that attitude.
So I'm not happy that Quinn was in this episode as much as she was. And I think I've already said that before, which is maybe an indicator of how much I'm not happy about this, because I feel like this is going to be Charles's age-appropriate relationship.
I don't want Quinn in the show.
Right? But I mean, you know, as much as, you know, in the end of season 6, when Bob and Julia are telling Liza that, you know, this is more of an age-appropriate match with us. It's not Bob and Julia. It's her friend from New Jersey tells her this is more an age-appropriate relationship, whereas Josh, they were mocking Josh when they came to the house all those seasons ago, that I feel like Quinn might be Charles's like age-appropriate match.
Yeah,
or
possibly.
Lady of the moment or something. I mean, I wish you guys could see my face right now. Like, I'm making this face like it's age-appropriate.
And I mean, I don't like it.
I don't like it because, like, Kelsey uses the word mercurial and, you know, she's got a couple of different personas and I just don't like this. And I feel like she's giving Charles the one that's going to benefit her right now.
I think she can definitely play to the audience that she's trying to play to. So she seems the type of person that will adjust her approach depending on what she wants to get out of it.
Oh, absolutely. All right, let's talk about somebody more fun. Let's talk about somebody much more fun. Lauren is turning 30. You and I are past that mark.
Just a touch.
it was a milestone, right? But Lauren is turning 30. She has her big birthday party. And I just want to ask you, like, what do you think that this means for the millennial crowd in this season? So, like, Josh became a dad. That's a big thing, right? That happened last season. And now Warren's turning 30. Kelsey's next.
I know. They're all growing up.
The babies. Our babies are growing up.
Yes. It's about time. You can't be 20 for, like, 7 seasons. I was actually surprised that Lauren was 30, but maybe she is a bit older than Kelsey, because it feels like only 2 years has passed in this world, and I'm positive Kelsey was only 26, but maybe we just never knew what Lauren's birthday or age really was from the beginning.
Maybe she's age fluid. Who knows?
Everything's fluid these days.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I think it's about time they sort of move into the 30s. You know, the older millennials are already in their sort of late 30s. I think is some just about to turn 40? Is that the millennial sort of age still? I forget when the cutoff is.
I don't know. I think Gen X kind of ends at like 80.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so the older millennials would be turning 40 like this year. So yeah, so I guess it's time to, you know, maybe move out of the burg and maybe move to the burbs for some of them.
Yeah, they're starting to get into the phase of life where you have responsibilities like children, like Josh has.
Right.
Who knows, maybe they might even be able to start thinking of property, but it is New York, so maybe not. It could be like London, where you're
expensive. Right.
Yeah, I think in London, like, it's usually late 30s before anyone can afford anything there. So I imagine New York's very similar.
Very similar, yes. But Lauren ends up throwing herself this elaborate birthday party. And I just love that she used the Little Women in Space theme.
Oh, I just thought it was hilarious. I think also as like a book concept, just absolutely bonkers.
Like, yeah.
I just was like, really? And that Kelsey went for it and was like, yeah, I think I like that. Let's do it. And I'm like,
we can make that work.
Well, I mean, there was also that Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and that kind of worked. I mean, I did watch that movie. It wasn't too bad, and it was based on a book.
Don't know if I'd watch it again, but I definitely enjoyed it while I was watching
it. I think I'm the
it.
Same. I watched it once. I thought, oh, it was enjoyable, but I really don't need to go back and revisit it.
Yeah, I'm good. But, like, what was your take on the party and the theme? Like, so, I mean, more so the take on the party, the theme we talked about.
It was pure Lauren all over, just over the top, a lot of fun. I loved her mother's introduction.
Do you know that actress, Kathy Najimy? Do you know her?
Yes. I mean, she appears in a lot of things. Isn't she? Practical Magic is the one I think of most when I
Hocus
see her.
Pocus.
Oh, Hocus Pocus, is it?
Mm-hmm. Hocus Pocus, Sister Act.
She and Sister Act. Oh, she is, yes. Too. Forgot, yes. About that. Yeah, no.
So, I mean, as Lauren's mom, I love her, but dang, like, she looks good.
She does, like, yeah.
I mean, Sister Act was 30 years ago.
Yeah. I feel like she hasn't aged in that time much.
No, like, in reverse for the, it definitely looks like.
Yeah, no, I love her. She's a great actress.
I'm kind of sad that I wasn't invited to Lauren's party, I'm going to be honest with you.
It did look like a lot of fun. I never have friends that throw parties like that.
Me neither. You know, I think we all need a Lauren in our lives. But yeah, I definitely got this whole like Lady Gaga vibe from her entrance, her costume. I just love that her mom's like, fix your crotch.
There's like very little boundaries between them, isn't there?
Right, exactly. Again, with that, you know, fluid line there. All right, so I think that's kind of it with the characters. We're going to do our meditations with Maggie. We're going to end each episode with a little bit of wisdom from Miss Maggie Amato of Williamsburg, Brooklyn. It seems like every episode, like, I started paying attention about halfway through season 6. I was like, huh, I think we need to do something with Maggie here, because she has everything that she says has some relevance to either the moral of the episode, like, you know, what somebody needs to reflect on, or like, she was the one who came up with the merger between Mercury and Millennial.
She definitely gives the best advice, and it's definitely the advice that people tend to follow.
And she also delivers in a way that, like, there's no BS. It's straight to the heart. We're going to play a little clip for you here. So it's in the very beginning of the episode. We liked where Maggie was giving Liza advice on how to handle the proposal. And we'll play that now.
So what was the ring like?
We didn't get that far.
So you never even got to see the goods?
Oh, I've seen the goods. And I don't need a big ring to make me happy. Besides, he basically withdrew the question.
Oh, so you hesitated and he choked.
Something like that.
Well, then it's all good. We'll just pretend it never happened. I mean, from what you said, the sex is hot, right? So why spoil a good thing?
I can't unhear a marriage proposal. The question is out there.
enjoy the sex, enjoy the hot sex, and pretend like it didn't happen, basically. So, which Liza doesn't follow, but it's fine. But it is good advice.
Look, if you're getting hot sex, you just really shouldn't give that up too easily.
Don't look that gift horse in the mouth, you know?
Not everyone's getting that.
Exactly. Yeah. Times are tough. It's COVID time still.
Exactly. And the other thing that Maggie let slip in this episode was that she made out with Debbie Harry for her 30th birthday. Now, that is pretty cool if that's what she did, because Debbie Harry is, like, amazing. I love Blondie.
Same.
I listen to their songs quite regularly.
But now I gotta ask, does the math add up there? Because if Liza's born in 76, Maggie's about her age, right? Maybe a little bit older. So that would put her at 30 around like 2005 to 8-ish range. And Debbie Harry, not to say that she wasn't sexy in 2008 or 2010, but like her heyday was really the 80s.
Yeah, but
I might read too much into these things too.
Maybe, but then also we already talked about how the younger universe timeline doesn't follow everyone else's in the world's timeline. So who knows when that happened, really? And besides, Debbie Harry is still hot at any age, so...
Mm-hmm. She too is ageless and timeless.
Exactly. So I would totally be like Maggie. Even if it was just a lookalike, I'd be totally saying that's what happened.
Yeah, she's going to own that for the rest of her life. And there's nobody around to refute it.
Exactly.
She talks about CBGBs, and that is a relic as well. That was a fantastic New York rock club all the way downtown, and it is too no more. So there's nobody to tell her tale.
Well, then in that case, it just makes it true. If you say it, it is true.
Exactly. So that is it for my meditations with Maggie. Anything else from you, Emma, to add?
No, I think that covers the episode pretty well, actually. I'm just very excited to see what happens.
Yes. We want to thank you today for joining us for the season 7 premiere of Younger. This has been Heller Good, the Younger podcast from Pod Clubhouse. You can find us on social media, on all the things at Pod Clubhouse, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. And if you could also rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast wherever you get podcasts from, it's a great way for other people to find the show, to have as much enjoyment out of it that you do, and also for you to get a notification anytime that we drop a new episode. So we will be right back in your feed very soon with episode 2. Thanks so much for listening.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.